Blog Talk Radio.
I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. She said I had to go to the doctor. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. I received treatment and we're confident I'll be fine. Please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Get the inside knowledge about gynecologic cancers. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning. Welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys. And you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And I would love to hear from you. Send me an email. My email is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. I want to thank you so much for listening. Close to 71,000 downloads of the podcast. That is all due to your support. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. I just cut off the line with Powerhouse, Dr. Bradley, Dr. Tillett, Sophia Nelson, the State of Young Black Women. So you want to check out that podcast. It should be available to listen to in a couple of minutes, and you can share with your friends. From health, education, relationships, we tried to cover so many topics in a short period, but it was a great show. So check that out. But this morning, or this afternoon, I should say, right now I'm speaking with Dr. Matthew Powell. He's the director of Gynecologic Oncology Fellowship at Washington University School of Medicine. Good morning, Dr. Powell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your program.
Thank you for calling in. And also I have award-winning personality, Sharon McGee. You might know her. She premiered the Pocketbook Monologues. It featured Kim Cole, Cecilia Yvonne Stickney, Essence Atkins, and Ella Joyce, the Pocketbook Monologues. But now she's dealing with the Cancer Monologues coming out this fall. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Doctor. I am so excited that by the grace of God I'm here to share my cancer journey. Thank you so much for having the courage to have a conversation about the worst cancer, the cancer that many women whisper about, and I'm just honored to be here.
Well, I did another show with Chana Garcia. She's another media person who writes a lot in different Essence and different magazines about ovarian cancer before. But I'd like to repeat things because people don't hear the show or they're not aware of it, and they're not aware of different symptoms that happen, in particular with ovarian cancer. It's very tricky. I want to start off with the doctor about just explain what is ovarian cancer to the audience.
So ovarian cancer is cancer, obviously, that arises from the ovary, but within that is also cancers of the fallopian tube and the lining of the abdomen called the peritoneum. Those three sites tend to all behave very similarly. Now, there's within ovarian cancer, there's several different types of ovarian cancer. Some come from what's called the germ cell or the egg. Some come from the support structure of the ovary. And then most come from the lining of the ovary, the covering of the ovary that is where most of the ovarian cancer called epithelial ovarian cancer comes from. And that's the most deadly form of ovarian cancer.
I want to bring Sharon in. What symptoms were you having before you actually got diagnosed with ovarian cancer?
I was having the classic symptoms of ovarian cancer. Once I realized what I was going through, I went through for about a year of heavy bleeding off and on. I had bloating. I had problems with my digestive system. I started to lose weight, and I really became very up and down emotionally. But the other thing that was happening in my life was my mother had suffered a debilitating stroke. And so my focus, and as many times we do, we mask what's going on to deal with what's immediately happening right now. And when my mother died was the day I was diagnosed. I felt a separation from that reality to what was actually going on in my body. And what I would like women to know is that your body does speak to you. We have the ability to listen to our bodies, and we have the ability sometimes not to listen. And we did not listen in my particular case.
Well, I want to read, according to the CDC, some of the risk factors for people women at risk for getting ovarian cancer, according to the CDC, if you're middle-aged or older, If you had a family member on either side, the mother or father side, there's genetic mutation. Also, if you had another form of cancer, breast, uterine, or colorectal cancer.
And I'm glad that you brought it up. Excuse me, Joy, I'm glad that you brought that up because we know that most of the times breast cancer receives the most attention. But once you've been diagnosed with any type of cancer, you might be subject to having another type of cancer. So for me, ovarian cancer is my journey, but the cancer journey is what links it all together. Because once you're diagnosed, there are some universal themes that happen, and so those are the types of things that we have to concentrate on once you receive your diagnosis. I didn't know that ovarian cancer had a month. It's September. I didn't know that ovarian cancer had a color. It's teal, because all I had heard about was breast cancer. So most women that have been diagnosed with ovarian or breast, neither or the other, at some point you might have to face another diagnosis with one or the other. So thanks for bringing
that up. Dr. Powell, I want to ask you this question. On the CDC talking about if a woman has never given birth or had trouble getting pregnant, she may be at risk. How is that connected to getting ovarian cancer? And why is that so?
That's a good question. We don't entirely know why a history of infertility or difficulty getting pregnant is linked with ovarian cancer. At one point, we thought maybe it was infertility drugs, but that really doesn't seem to be the case entirely. The main theory on ovarian cancer is that when an egg is released, the surface covering of the ovary is damaged. And during that damage, the DNA is damaged, and that ovary has to repair. So basically, every time a woman ovulates, she increases her risk of ovarian cancer. So women that are pregnant or on birth control pills, they're no longer ovulating, and that actually decreases their risk of ovarian cancer. So if we look, the more children you have, the longer you breastfeed, those things will suppress ovulation, and they translate into a decreased risk of ovarian cancer. We also know if you take birth control pills for 5 years, you cut your risk of ovarian cancer in half. So many of these factors are thought to be working through suppressing ovulation. So obviously a woman who has infertility has continued to ovulate and presumably damage that ovary and increase her risk of developing ovarian cancer.
Sharon, when you went to your doctor, did they immediately know that you had ovarian cancer, or did you have a struggle? I know my other show I did with Chana Garcia and Dr. Chu from the University of Pennsylvania, the issue of misdiagnosis has been a big problem for women.
I think for me, I dealt with this in stages. Sometimes the heavy bleeding would be a problem, and then it would stop. So once that stopped, I kind of put it in the back of my head. And remember, at this point, I'm still dealing with my mother suffering a debilitating stroke.
Mm-hmm.
My immediate
mm-hmm.
concern was her. Now, once that wasn't as immediate, when I went to the emergency room, they kept me. They knew right away that I had a growth. They knew because of the positioning of it, it was probably going to be problematic, and they scheduled me for surgery the next day. And that's when I got the diagnosis that I had ovarian cancer and that it would require chemotherapy as well. The first time.
You've had twice ovarian cancer.
Yes, and doctor, I'm sure you can understand my position emotionally when I talk about this. This is my third recurrence with ovarian cancer. I'm not sure what remission really means, because as soon as I think I'm okay, I go back for a CT scan, and I've got another tumor. So it's been an ongoing process that cancer knocked on my door, and probably that's where I'm right now, because she doesn't want to leave, doctor. She's just hanging around. And I am in a clinical trial at the University of Chicago here to fight for my joy. At some point, my oncologist set me down and was very honest and pointed in my face and said to me, and I quote, "You have an aggressive cancer, and we have to treat it aggressively." So after the first mm-hmm. surgery and the first round of chemo and the second surgery and the second round of chemo, now they don't want to do any more surgery. So I'm in a clinical trial, which, as you know, is an experiment, but I see it all as an experiment. And for me, I'm willing to go through that to prolong my life. Now I'm able to talk about my journey. It wasn't this joy. I didn't always think that what I went through could help somebody else. I know what depression
is. Well, I think
is.
That
I know
you can help somebody else. I think you can help somebody else, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show. I wanted to bring a doctor in the conversation here about testing. What are the tests out there for checking to see if a woman has ovarian cancer? My understanding is not one specific test. There are multiple tests, yes?
That's correct. I also want to take a time and actually just thank Sharon for her her comments, and hopefully she can help inspire women to be aggressive about taking care of their own health care. I really have to commend her for the work she's been doing and the public service that she provides. But moving on to your question, pardon me a second. The tests that can be done really relate to the symptoms that people have, and as you mentioned, some of the risk factors like age and whether somebody's still menstruating. All these are factors on what tests that we might do. First that we would start with is a careful history, and then performing a physical exam that includes pelvic examination.
Pelvic examination.
Examining the tubes and ovaries, and often a rectal exam performed as well, to really allow us to feel those ovaries the best possible. The tests beyond that involve use of a blood test called CA-125 and possibly an ultrasound and or CAT scan looking for abnormalities.
So now, once these tests are done, how long does it take for the results to come back? Is it a week, 2 weeks?
But usually these can come back right away. The test results usually do not take long. Usually within the first 24 hours, we'll have most of those results back. Now, they may not be definitive. The CA-125 has a lot of problems in that there's a lot of normal things that will elevate it. And the CA-125 is a blood test that can be run. So sometimes we have to follow things over time. So it may take some time to figure things out. And unfortunately, we often have to go in and actually perform surgery before we know what something is, whether it's truly cancer or not. We can't.
Well,
we don't want to put
a
needle in and do a biopsy because that can sometimes spread the cancer cells.
I think if I could.
Go ahead, Sharon.
Doctor,
you're going to say something?
I think, yes, Joy. And I think the doctor could please just verify this, because for most women, we are taught that the pap smear is the end-all and be-all for everything gynecology that we want to find out. But if I had, which I did, have my pap smear annually, which I did, my mammograms annually, everything that I was doing right until my mother got sick would not have given me the diagnosis of ovarian cancer. So the pap smear, although well-intended and does a great service for us, that specific test would not have given me the answers that I needed when I believed that I was misdiagnosed and then masked the symptoms. So, doctor, could you explain why the pap smear doesn't give us the answers we need for this?
Right. Well, the pap smear is really only designed to detect cervical cancer or precancerous changes of the cervix. It does not usually indicate ovarian cancer or uterine cancer. Now, rarely, we sometimes can find some abnormal cells that have come from the ovary that are detected in the pap smear, but that's the exception. So the key here, and I think the why we're holding this conference today, is to get the word out about symptoms. And I guess along those lines, I would like to give a plug for the Foundation for Women's Health group Foundations for Women Cancer, that is involved with getting the word out for ovarian cancer. They have a lot of patient resources on their website. It's our national foundation, and specifically Project Hope is a project that's looking at getting that word out, just to address Sharon's concerns here that pap smears don't do it. We need to have people educated about the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer and have a plan on how to take care of this. The real problem we have is things in our body that change slowly over time are very hard to...
Dr. Powell, I'm sorry. I just want to tell the audience the website address for the foundation. It's foundationforwomenscancer.org. Again, foundationforwomenscancer.org. And also I want to mention that November 6, 2011, in Washington, D.C., the foundation is holding a national race to end women's cancer. And I'll post the link to that on my page. And you can learn more about the race and get involved and form a team. Again, that's on November 6th in Washington, D.C. They're having a national race to end women's cancer. But go ahead, Doctor. You were going to continue about the importance of education.
No, I thank you for bringing up the website. I think that it's really been very detailed information on that website. There's patient handouts there. There's a lot of referral information. The whole idea here is to get women in sooner. Much of the first consultation I have with patients that have been recently diagnosed with ovarian cancer has to deal with their anger on how long it took them to get to see me, because they've been complaining for such a long time, and that is not at all unusual. It's a difficult diagnosis to make because the signs and symptoms are quite subtle, as Sharon mentioned. But typically when we think about the signs being bloating, pelvic and abdominal pain, difficulty eating, urinary symptoms, these are many symptoms that women suffer throughout their life, especially as you get around menopause. It's not uncommon. What we want to stress is if these symptoms last more than 2 to 3 weeks, you really should consider seeing your gynecologist and having an examination and requesting further tests be done.
I want to bring Sharon into the conversation. One of the things that you brought up earlier is about, both of you, you brought up anger about being delayed diagnosis, Dr. Powell, but she brought up the issue of depression. Let's talk about when you're dealing with an illness, how it affects you mentally. Sharon, what are some things that you're doing right now to try to maintain, you know, your mental health? Because any illness, diabetes, lupus, multiple sclerosis, sarcoidosis, any chronic illness or reoccurring illness, it really wears on you. What are things that you're doing to keep you strong?
Well, I think for the first diagnosis, it was more shock and anger. Remember, I'm dealing with the loss of my mother. I went home for her memorial service, and I flew back to Chicago to begin my chemotherapy treatments on New Year's Eve. How do you prepare for that, Joy? I mean, what do you wear to chemo on New Year's Eve? So I'm going through it, and the second time that cancer came back into my life, I was very depressed about it. I started to find friendships in prescription drugs, and I can tell you that my closest friend was OxyContin, followed secondly by morphine, and then a little Vicodin just to make the party okay. So after about 8 months of depression and self-isolation, I realized that during this diagnosis of cancer, I wanted to be omnipresent. I wanted to be a better patient. I changed my diet. I exercise every day. I got my spiritual compass in order so that I wasn't wearing the cancer every day. I wasn't angry about it anymore. This is what I have. I asked for cancer, certainly not 3 times. Are you kidding me? So now during this treatment, I am omnipresent. I wanted to be a better daughter to my father, who lost his wife when I lost my mother. I wanted to be a better friend. You know, I called my best friend, Doc, about 2 weeks ago, and she said, "I didn't even recognize your voice." I said, "Why?" "Because I wasn't crying and depressed. Oh, I'm so sick. I can't take it anymore." Now I'm thinking, right, you know what? I have another day to possibly make the difference in somebody else's life. So when Dr. Oz called, I was like, "You guys want to tell my story?" Because when they do these national shows, Joy, they're looking for the case scenarios. I have a very aggressive cancer, and I'm trying to thrive through it. I don't want people to know that cancer doesn't have me. I have cancer, so I can tour with the Pocketbook Monologues and the Coin Purse Monologues, and now we have a new show. It's called the Cancer Monologues. A funny thing happened on the way to chemo. So we are trying to bring in the voices of men that have prostate cancer that would rather lie to their wives.
Well, I want to mention, Sharon, I want to mention real quick that this month is also Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. But Dr. Powell, I want to bring him into the conversation. I want to talk about the treatments. She's been through this. This is her third time. She's
number
three. Chemo. What are some other treatments? There are drugs out there. What are some new things on the horizon that may be helpful for people with ovarian cancer? So that's a two-part question. What are current, and then what are some new things coming out for treatments of ovarian cancer?
So good question. And really, as Sharon points out, ovarian cancer is a very much a roller coaster ride. And the stresses involved with the diagnosis, those are things that we're studying to try to figure out how we can help better manage stress to have people get through their therapy in a much more positive outlook. tends to pretend a better outcome. So when we look at current therapies for ovarian cancer, the main thrust is having your initial surgery. We strive to remove all visible disease at the time of initial surgery. What we consider an optimal surgery is having no large tumor masses remaining at the initial surgery. And this really gives you the best chances of long-term survival and cure. There's use of chemotherapy given directly in the abdomen called peritoneal chemotherapy. This increases the dose of drug that the cancer sees by as much as 20 to 40-fold by giving the cancer chemotherapy directly into the abdomen. And this has been shown in several studies to allow people to live on average almost a year and a half longer. Some of the new studies that we're looking at involve targeted therapy, so-called drugs that really just affect the cancer and don't affect the rest of the body to a great detail. Some of those drugs are called bevacizumab or Avastin, which is a medication designed that actually to starve the cancer of the ability to grow new blood cells. And there's been some excitement with this new compounds that are being developed. There's also some oral pills that are being developed as part of the future therapy that specifically target some of the weaknesses of the cancer. And I have to thank Sharon for participating in clinical trials, because that's the only way we're going to get better and move the treatment for ovarian cancer forward.
Well, I wanted to mention on the foundation website, it's wcn.org/research. You can go there and learn more about clinical trials and research. There's a link there that says clinical trials and research. Again, that's wcn.org/research. And you can learn some more about if you're somebody dealing with ovarian cancer or you know someone dealing with other cancers, also uterine cancer, vaginal cancer. So they deal with a variety of forms of cancer, and you can check that out there. But also I want to mention Sharon's website. She has a website that talks about her cancer monologues and also her pocketbook monologues. It's called pocketbookmonologues.com. Again, pocketbookmonologues.com. You can learn more about Sharon McGee there. And the coin purse monologues, and now also the cancer monologues. Can they purchase that from your website, Sharon, the book?
Yes, I wanted to certainly just share my journey, and thank you so much for having the doctor on with me. I think it's very important whenever we have this conversation that we have someone from the medical field that can give us more detailed answers. For me, this is just my journey. I can't really expect other people that haven't been through it to get it, but it's not something that you want. I promise you that. And for me, three times, I just had to find a way that it made sense. I couldn't understand why this recurrence would come again. But when I went to the Dr. Oshel, I met a woman that had been through 14 clinical trials. Just hearing that gave me inspiration. This is my first one, doctor. So I thought, she's fighting. And that's what I want to do. I want to be able to extend my life because now it is filled with purpose. When you reach a level that you know your story can possibly help the lives of another woman, help the lives of families that don't think about this cancer. When I grew up in my household, when I was diagnosed, they asked me, well, did you have a history? And I went back and asked my family. Well, I couldn't ask my mother because she had just passed away. And we used to say, well, you know, she died, she had female problems. There was nothing specific about that. Female problems. You know, in our community, we tend to mask things even when they're very obvious. So now I do.
Well, I think that's an important point right there, talking to your children about family medical history, or if you're a child, speaking with your parents, your grandparents, whoever you can reach out to find out about medical history. A lot of times people don't want to talk about trauma. I mean, having an illness is a form of trauma that affects you mentally.
Yes.
So sometimes in trauma you want to forget. You don't want to remember. But you have
Joy,
to try to reach out as
this?
Best you can.
Ask me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Joy. May I answer this? Because you asked me, what else am I doing to keep strong? Because it's not always like this. I was looking forward to this interview. I'm actually at another event, and I look great. And people say, well, wow, you don't look sick. And I want to say, well, I didn't have cancer in the face. You look at my CT scan, it might show something that's not this big.
Exactly.
But I wanted people to understand that now I go to support groups, and I never did that before, Joy. And now I understand why they are so important. But I also understand why we're so reluctant to go. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to share it. And for the first, I would say, 2 months, I didn't say a word. I just listened. But the stories of inspiration inspired me to become now a part of those support groups. So when the Ovarian Cancer Coalition called and asked if they could use my, their quote, not mine, remarkable survival story, I said, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Joy called today, and I was like, well, you know, I really have another appointment, but this is more important to me. My priorities shifted the third time that I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer.
Well, I want to, Sharon, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I really want to just send all the hope and blessing towards you, because I cannot
understand
what you're going through having cancer. I haven't had cancer one time, so I can't even understand that. You had it three times. But I want to close with the doctor real quick, a question. How is it possible that she had it three times and that she's still here? I mean, what is the likelihood of a woman having ovarian cancer more than once? Is there a high likelihood, or is that an anomaly? What is that?
Well, and again, that's not unusual. It's the cancer tends to be able to be put in remission usually, actually fairly easily. About 80 to 90%, we can get a complete response, and then all the disease goes away on CAT scan, on physical exam, and the cancer markers normalize. Those are those blood tests that we mentioned. Unfortunately, there's about an 80% chance that the cancer will come back. Now, sometimes that's 5 years later. Sometimes that's a few months later. The longer it goes not coming back, the more likely we'll be able to put it back in remission. I've had some patients that have had 5 to 7 remissions, and it is that emotional roller coaster they go through during all that time. They certainly like having a remission, but it's just that fear of it's always coming back.
Wow.
I
want to mention again
the curious case of cancer.
The curious,
I like to call it, doctor, the curious case of cancer. Sometimes I envision these cells, and, you know, they're not together, and then somebody calls another one, hey, meet me behind her pelvic bone. Let's have a little party after Saturday night. Yeah. Come back together,
right.
And there's another tumor, you know? So it's like, come on, give me a break. But I think for me, and I have talked to a lot of people in treatment, doctor, we're all going through the same thing. The people that support us, that love us, once you hear that you've been diagnosed with cancer, there's a ripple effect. So we have to honor the people that hold us and kiss our scars when we're not feeling that great. And so thank you so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.
Well, I'm just happy that you were able to make the call. Again, considering that this is the third time, I am blessed that you have come on the show, that you're here, you're able to talk and communicate. And hopefully today with the doctor and yourself, we have enlightened the listeners and given hope to other people that, you know, if you've been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, there are lots of options out there. There's lots of support groups. Again, I want to mention Sharon's website, thepocketbookmonologues.com. I want to mention foundationforwomenscancer.org. That's Dr. Powell. Thank you for coming on. I want to thank the organization. Also, they're having a race in Washington, D.C., the National Race to End Women's Cancer. That's November 6, 2011. And you can go to their website, foundationforwomenscancer.org, to learn more about that race. You can follow them on Twitter. Their Twitter hook is GYN Cancer. Again, that's GYN Cancer. And they're also on Facebook. Sharon's also on Facebook. She has a website for Pocketbook Monologues. So please reach out to Sharon and share your story with her so that she can continue writing, continue to be an inspiration. Karen, I just, again, I'm Sharon, oh, sorry, all my hope and blessing is to you that you will survive.
Thank you very much.
Be a champion.
Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing this time. There are a lot of conversations that we need to have, but whenever ovarian cancer is highlighted, and I'm very glad to participate. So thank you very much, and thank you so much, doctor. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Powell, for being on the call today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye now.
Goodbye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, you can follow me on twitter.com/JoyKeys. You can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And also send me an email. I would love to hear from you. SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. I want to mention to you that your health is not a part-time job. It's a full-time job with benefits. If you take care of your health, it will take care of you. Go get your checkups. do your monthly breast self-exams, and listen to your body. Listen, if you are having a problem, fight with your doctor. If they refuse, and if you have option, choose another doctor. You have sometimes choices, so please take that time. Again, have a wonderful Saturday and a great week.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.